Welcome to the Hunt Backcountry podcast presented by Exo Mountain Gear. This podcast and the gear that we produce at Exo Mountain Gear share the same purpose: to make you a more capable, confident, and successful backcountry hunter. Straight to the point, no fluff, and no BS. This show is all about providing you with valuable information from experienced hunters. To learn more about the podcast or about our backcountry hunting packs, please visit exomountaingear.com. Well, thank you guys so much for joining us for this episode, episode 81, with a repeat guest, Clay Hayes. This time with Clay, we're talking about an interesting topic, which is pack goats. That's right, goats. So this past fall was the first opportunity that I had to hunt with pack goats, and it's something that Clay has been getting more into as well. So in this episode, we talk about our experiences in the field with these pack goats, how they've helped us, some of the pros and cons of hunting with pack goats, and then really kind of dive into some information to get you guys started learning about pack goats, whether you're interested in raising them or maybe renting them for a future hunt, or whether you just want to hear some fun hunting tales. Because I'll tell you one thing for sure, hunting with pack goats is interesting and it's fun, and it's a whole adventure in and of itself. Before we get into that, I want to thank Jared Frost for leaving us a review on iTunes. Jared, we want to send some Exo Mountain Gear swag your way. Please just contact us by email to podcast@exomountaingear.com and we will get you taken care of. Listeners, if you want to enter into these weekly giveaways, it's real simple. Just consider leaving us a review in iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever else you might be listening to this. I just checked to pull Jared's name from the iTunes directory, and we have over 450 reviews. That is amazing. You guys are killing it. Thank you so much for doing that. As well, you can contact us at any time with questions, comments, or feedback to podcast@exomountaingear.com. Okay, enough rambling for me. Let's get on and discuss hunting with pack goats with Clay Hayes. Well, Clay, welcome back to the show. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing awesome. It's good to be back.
Yeah, man. So I certainly enjoyed the first episode we had with you last year. Got great feedback from it. Glad to have you back, although kind of going to cover an entirely new topic tonight. But before we dive specifically into that, you know, it's been about a year since we've had you on the podcast. So what's how was the hunting season 2016? Tell us a story, any highlights, any lessons learned, anything that sticks out from this past year?
I didn't kill an elk with my bow this year, so I went back on a late season hunt with my flintlock and ended up shooting a cow on that, so that was good. Did put out a couple of little short videos on my YouTube channel about that. And other than that, I mean, that's the only real, that's the only big hunt we did this fall, the two elk hunts. Normally I do a lot of whitetail hunting, but I'm rebuilding my truck right now, so that's been taking up a lot of my time. So I kind of started that at a pretty poor time of the year.
Oh man, yeah, I'm like waist deep in house projects right now, so I know how that goes and how those types of projects can take away from the free time, if you will.
Oh, yeah.
So before, I mean, you mentioned the YouTube channel, and we talked about it a bit on the previous podcast, but for those guys who are new, what's your YouTube channel? How can guys find you or your website, anything like that, before we forget to mention it?
Yeah, so if you just Google Clay Hayes, you'll find my website, my YouTube channel, all that stuff. All that stuff is linked through my website as well with twistedstave.com, so you can get on there. You can find all my YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, all that stuff from there.
Awesome. Perfect. So something new this year for you, was hunting with goats, and that's kind of the topic for tonight. Before we get into it, I know, you know, before we get too goat specific, that you've had some experience with horses and, you know, just kind of general with pack animals and using those. What made you interested in goats, you know, with the background that you've had?
All right, so I grew up on a ranch. My dad's a horse trainer, and so I've been around horses since, I mean, forever. The thing that got me interested in goats was, well, a couple of things. First of all, is ease of maintenance. I mean, they don't eat much. They're super easy to keep. And one of the big things was just the ease of transport. I mean, I throw them in the back of the truck, and you can go anywhere with them. Where with a horse trailer, you got to have a place to turn around. You're not going to go up down any narrow mountain two tracks or anything like that. And then the third thing was that with horses, they're great when you're packing in and when you're packing out, but you're pretty much stuck to main trails. And you gotta have good feed for them. You gotta have grass, you gotta have water. And so you're a little bit limited in where you can go. But with goats, you don't have any of that stuff. That they need very little water. They eat, they'll eat anything,
Anything, right?
literally. I've got a story about that a little later on, but they're just super easy, just super easy to keep.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this year was my first year hunting with pack goats, as it turns out, as well. And my hunting partner, he did all the hard work in terms of, like, they're his goats. He's trained them, he's selected them, he's conditioned them. And so I was really along for the ride and didn't know what we were getting into till we did it, till we showed up in the backcountry. And man, it was pretty cool for sure. I'm sure we'll get all into it. But yeah, in terms of, like, what they eat, how low maintenance they are, it was pretty awesome. So do you have any other, I mean, because, there's guys who use horses, clearly. Pack goats, you don't see much of, although I think there's getting to be a bit more out there. I know that anyone we ran into, like at a trailhead or anywhere like that, was just dumbfounded that we're using goats for hunting. But obviously there's llamas and things in between. Do you have any experience with that, or any other comparisons you'd make to any other pack animals with the goats?
I don't have much experience with anything other than horses and goats, other than just talking with other guys. One of the, like, for instance, llamas, and I don't want to talk about them too much because I don't have, like I said, I don't have a lot of experience with them. But from what I understand, they don't, they could, they don't have any desire to be with you. They're more like a horse in that manner. Like a horse in the backcountry, when I packed with horses, I'd have two of them, and I would always keep one on the high line. I'd always keep one tied up because if I turn both of them loose, there's no telling where they're going to turn up. They'd probably turn up back at the trailhead 10 miles back, and so they'll leave you. Whereas the goats, I don't tie them up at all. I just let them. I mean, they want to be with you, and so they you just let them run around camp. And as long as you can keep them out of your stuff, they'll stay right there with you.
Yeah, so that is, again, that's kind of jumping ahead, but certainly they want to get into everything. And it's so funny. A couple of the goats that my buddy had, he's raised some from birth, and then some he got as, I think, 3-year-olds. And the 3-year-olds he had got from this gentleman, this guy had trained them. And one of their treats was he would give them, I think it was granola bars. But anyway, anytime these goats heard a wrapper, they were like, I mean, they would stop whatever they were doing, and they were just super interested in anything. Anytime they heard a wrapper, and clearly, when you're living in the backcountry for a week, you're bound to have some food and wrappers. And so, anytime we were on camp or even just out in the wilderness, man, as soon as they heard the crinkle of a wrapper, they were right at you. And we literally in the side pocket of our packs would just keep a little, like, a Sprite bottle with a spray cap on it or a spray top on it, and just have to hit those guys with water, and that would keep them away. But yeah, they can certainly want to get into everything, that's for sure.
Yeah, the spray bottle. So my wife, we've got the pack goats, that I use, and then we've got also goats that she milks, and so she has to go out there and get them out of the, you know, stall. And she doesn't like my goats, because when she tries to get her goats out, they all try to run out because there's no feed out there.
Yeah.
And so she started getting one of those bottles and spraying them in the face, and man, that works like a charm.
Oh yeah, it does for sure. So let's hit two highlights, or I should say a highlight and a low light, and then let's kind of dive through, you know, kind of from A to Z on hunting with goats. So the highlight and the low light, what's your favorite aspect of hunting with goats, and what's your least favorite aspect of hunting with the goats?
It's probably one and the same. There's when you have goats in camp, there is never a dull moment. they have individual personalities. You know, that they're fun to be around. They want to be around you, but at the same time, they want to be right up in everything with you. Like for instance, this past elk season, we were staying in a wall tent, and I went to get out of my cot one night, and I stepped on a goat because they had gotten into the wall tent, and they were sleeping on the floor. And so, you know, you got these things you have to, I mean, that's just one of the things that happen. I don't know if you want to talk about all the mishaps right now or not.
Oh, anything,
we
yeah.
I could talk.
Anything you want to share?
I hunt with two other guys, and we got a pretty nice wall tent set up. Me and one of the other guys always carry earplugs. You know, you never know who's going to be snoring in a wall tent. Not a light sleeper. Me and one other guy had earplugs in, and so I was sound asleep one night, and the guy that didn't have the earplugs, Teague, he comes in the back into the wall tent. He's like shining his headlamp in my face, and I'm all groggy. It's like, dude, what are you doing? Get that thing in my face. And he's a little bit miffed at me. I don't understand what's going on. And come to find out the next day, so he's sleeping, and the whole tent just starts shaking and rattling, and he's thinking that there's a bear trying to get in the tent. And so he grabs his headlamp and runs outside, and there was a goat standing on top of the wall tent.
Oh my goodness.
If you would have tried to tell me before then that a goat could get on top of a wall tent, I would not have believed you. But the next day I saw the damn thing back up there again.
Wow.
And what it was doing was we had some coolers sitting beside the tent, and then there was a bunch of willows that the tent was kind of backed up to some willows. And so the goat was getting on the cooler and then jumping up. It's an internal frame wall tent. And so there's kind of like this little level spot where the roof of the tent kind of comes down, hit that internal frame.
Mm-hmm.
And it was jumping from the cooler up on top of that, and then getting at those willows behind the tent. But they're fun to have, but man, they can be a real pain.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you said, it's never a dull moment. That's for sure.
Absolutely.
So let's kind of start from the top for anybody who, you know, maybe they're not interested in raising goats. Maybe they are, but you know, let's just kind of start from the beginning with considering to hunt with pack goats. You know, in your research and looking at things, and I know it might be different in different states, different areas, but any sort of issues in terms of legality, any places you've run into where there's certain restrictions or rules on hunting with goats, any sort of the logistics on making sure that they have certain vaccinations, kind of like those boring but necessary logistics, what have you run into with that?
Yeah, so the biggest thing that you're going to run into is, and I don't know if you'd I'm probably keenly aware of because I'm a wildlife biologist, but there is a bacteria that goats and sheep, domestic goats and sheep, can carry called Mycoplasma pneumoniae. And this bacteria is primarily why we don't have, large, robust populations of bighorn sheep throughout their historic range. This, if you follow along with, wild sheep management, this is one of the reasons there's so much, disagreement between wild sheep advocates and wool growers. Is ha you know having domestic sheep and bighorn sheep in the same ranges is because that this bacteria can be transmitted to bighorn sheep, and once it's in a bighorn population, it can it basically predisposes them to a pneumonia and causes high rates of lamb mortality. And so it can have huge devastating impacts on bighorn sheep populations. Now, with that said, you can test your goats for this bacteria. And all of mine have been tested multiple times in multiple different ways. And so I know that mine are free of this bacteria. And the way that I got that done, you can test them yourselves. And if you get on the internet and just Google MOVI, MOVI, and all and Bighorn or something like that, you'll come up with some stuff from Washington State University, telling you how you can test your goats. The Washington State was doing a study here. I don't know what I haven't checked in on it in a while, but they were doing a study a little while back, and they were, my animals, I was able to get them tested for free because they were just needing pack animals or pack goats to figure out what the prevalence of this bacteria was in pack animal or pack goats. And the last time I talked to the vet, I can't remember what the total number of animals that she had tested was, but it was over 100 animals. And as of the last time I talked to her, she hadn't detected a single pack goat that was carrying this bacteria. Now I've got a theory on why that is, and that's that for the most part, pack goats are, kept in very small herds, and this bacteria is primarily prevalent in large herds of domestic sheep. When you talk about a wool growing operation, you're talking about a lot of times thousands of animals, and it's easily transmitted. So if one animal has it, you can pretty much bet that most of the flock has got it. Whereas with the small, isolated, groups that where pet like pack goats are kept, as long as you don't have those animals in contact with other animals that are already carrying it, it's something that you don't have to worry about. But with that said, I would, if you're going to be hunting in bighorn in areas that do harbor bighorns, I would definitely get them tested just to be on the safe side. Because like I said, if it does get into a bighorn population that's free of it, it can have devastating impacts. So.
Yeah, notice even in Colorado, in certain parts of the state, they mention kind of specifically, and it's kind of a, they don't ban goats, but they ask that you don't use pack goats. But then in other parts of the state, it's not even in sort of the hunting guide or the regulations for the area, simply because it's not, bighorn country. But yeah, it's interesting. Do you know how it would be transported, from the goats to bighorns? Is it, is it just contact? Is it, I mean, do we know that?
I think it's primarily through contact, so touching noses, things like that. Basically, it would be transmitted I think, and I'm not an expert on this, but I think it would be transmitted pretty much like a common cold, being in close contact, coughing, touching noses, things like that.
So airborne within, close contact and things like that, potentially.
Yeah.
All right, so those are good considerations. Then when it comes to goats, I mean, and you've already mentioned this, your wife has, milk goats, you have pack goats. For listeners who are unaware, and you hear this term pack goats, school us on that. Is that an actual thing? Is that a subspecies? What makes a goat a pack goat versus, a dairy goat or some other form of goat?
Well, from all the reading I've done, so I've got the goats I have right now. I've got two Alpines, and then I've got one Nubian La Mancha cross. I had another Nubian La Mancha cross, but he's not with us anymore. Now the Nubian La Manchas, Nubians are fairly good sized goat, but La Manchas are pretty small. And so the Alpines that I have, they tend to be just a bigger, kind of a more robust, kind of a lanky goat. And from the reading I've done, they will tend to work harder than a Nubian. The big, my oldest Alpine that I have is probably the best goat I've got. And he, I mean, he'll hurt himself trying to keep up with you, whereas the others, the Nubian La Mancha crosses, they would keep up with you, but not. I mean, they'd stop too and let you get a pretty good ways out in front of them. I think that I don't know how much that has to do with their breeding and how much that has to do with the fact that. The Alpines that I have were bottle fed and imprinted on humans, whereas the Nubian La Manchas were not. I think that has a big, big impact on how good a pack goat they're going to make. But when I got into this, I kind of just jumped into it headlong, and I didn't know what I was doing. I hadn't even read a book about pack goats before I'd bought some, so I was just figuring things out as I went.
It's a good way to learn.
Well, yeah.
Trial by fire. So you mentioned imprinting, and I know that this ties into kind of what we've hinted at in terms of the goats wanting to be with you, wanting to be near you. But what is imprinting? And then, as you kind of mentioned, the effects of that. But why is that important for pack goats? And specifically, how does that play into hunting with pack goats?
So imprinting. So this spring, I'm gonna pick up two more Alpines, and I'm gonna get very, very young animals that have been bottle fed. And imprinting basically is they think you're a goat, or they think maybe they think they're a human. I don't know which way it goes,
Your
but
family.
they have a bond with you. Yeah, exactly. So they have a very strong bond with people. Now, it doesn't have to be with a specific person. It just has to be with a person. And the big thing that I saw with the goats that were imprinted versus the ones that were not imprinted is the ones that are imprinted, they will go through hell and high water to stay with you. The non-imprinted goats, they'll follow you, but they'll let you leave them too. I actually, this past elk season, I had four goats with me just out. They didn't have saddles or anything on. I was just letting them follow me while I was hunting. And I was hunting this kind of broad plateau with a real cliffy. One side was real cliffy and bluffy, had a big rock spine on it. And I'd heard some elk down below me, and I was wanting to go down. And that one of the goats that I had that was not imprinted kept wanting to go up. And so that's what that's the way they went. And that's the problem with having goats that aren't imprinted is if one of them starts to want to go somewhere, the rest of them will follow. And if you don't, you know, if you don't fall in line with them and just follow them, they'll go off and do their own thing. And so I ended up leaving them. I won't say what I called them when I left them up there, but I left them on that ridge that night because the last time I was going elk hunting and they were going up to, look off some cliff or something. I was very confident that I was going to find them the next day just because of where they were at. There was nowhere else they were going to go. But it happened that night. We had a blizzard come in, and so they spent all night up on the very tip top of a rock, huddled underneath a white bark pine, and they were at 9,000, probably 9,500 feet. And
oh my goodness.
And so I know they had a rough night, but I went back the next day and I was walking and I was down below them and making some noise in some talus or something walking across there. And I heard them laugh from up above me. I looked up there and they were all up there looking down at me saying, "Come and get me."
Oh man. Well, they learned their lesson for not sticking with you.
Yeah. So the goat that kept wanting to lead him away, I got rid of him, and now I'm down to the two that are imprinted. The other one that's not imprinted, I think he's going to be fine now that the other one's gone.
Yeah, get rid of the troublemaker.
Yeah, exactly.
This episode of the Hunt Backcountry podcast is brought to you by the good folks at First Light. Back in episode 75, we spoke with Ryan Callahan from First Light about some of the new products for 2017. One of those products, which I was super interested in back when I saw it in January when they released the new lineup, is the Sawtooth Hybrid Jacket. And now I've gotten my Sawtooth Hybrid and I've had a chance to check it out in person. It's a pretty amazing piece, really. It's unlike anything I've ever seen. I can't comment on field experience with it yet, but I was so excited to get my hands on it. What the Sawtooth Hybrid Jacket is a hybrid mix between what First Light's known for, and that's incredibly high quality merino wool, as well as their 37.5 synthetic insulation. So this hybrid jacket is really body mapped to give you synthetic fill insulation where you need it, such as your core and up front, and then it gives you merino wool in areas where you don't need as much insulation and you need more breathability, such as the entire back of the jacket. As you guys know, you're often hunting with a pack on. So you got merino in the back of this jacket. It's like a 320 gram, so it's still providing warmth. It's not really thin. But then you have this insulation up front. So this is going to be an incredibly helpful piece, I think, for adding warmth on winter days, but especially versatile in the early season when the temperatures start to drop, but it's not quite bone-chilling cold yet. So if you guys are interested, go check out the Sawtooth Hybrid as well as the entire First Light lineup at firstlight.com. So besides that imprinting, which as you mentioned is, you know, it's a good thing to do essentially from birth. You want them bottle fed, you want them used to human interaction. And again, it doesn't have to be a certain human. I was even surprised by myself when we hunted with them this year. You know, I had never spent any time with these goats. My hunting partner did. And I thought, man, they're going to be great with him and they're going to be, you know, stubborn and, you know, crazy with me. But yeah, they take to you right away. It's just, they wanted to be right there with us. In fact, it's funny, as we would hike, they would always want to be between us. And so it didn't matter who was in the lead, you know, either myself or my partner would be going up a trail and all the goats wanted to be single file behind the person in the lead. And then if it was me or my partner in back, they forced us to stay in the back. And we would have fun with it and play with it. And you'd run up in front of one of the goats and put a goat in the back. Oh, and they just wouldn't have it. I mean, they would go like off trail and run like crazy just because they wanted all three of them. We had three of them with us. They wanted to be right between us all the time. It was pretty interesting.
Yeah, that sounds very familiar.
So in addition to that imprinting, what specific training or conditioning, things like that, do they need to be, you know, ready to hunt in the backcountry or to make good pack goats?
Yeah. So as far as training goes, I don't know that there's a whole lot of training. I mean, I certainly didn't do a lot with mine. I got some pack saddles and strapped the pack saddles on them and turned them loose. And I mean, when you first put them on them, they kind of aren't real sure about it, but they get used to them really quickly. So I went out on a couple of pretty long trips this last year, and I had one goat that was pretty young, you know, a year and a half old, and I would just let him trail along, you know, just without a pack on at all, just going with us just to get, you know, kind of learn the ropes. There was another part of that question. I forgot it.
Oh, no, just anything in terms of training or conditioning. You know, anything special that needs to be done?
Yeah, the conditioning. That is one thing with goats you've really got to pay attention to. So with horses are big and powerful enough that you can, you know, it's not ideal, certainly, but you can just let them be lazy all year and then take them out in September and go on a, you know, 10-mile pack in. And they'll push through and make it. They might not be the fastest in the world, but you can make them go. You can't do that with goats. Goats get fat and lazy. And I mean, if you try to take a goat that's out of shape into rough country and put, you know, 30 or 40 pounds on his back, he's just not going to be able to do it. If you are going to go with goats, you need to, you know, if you're going to go on a spring bear hunt or something, you got to get them out, you know, and hiking and getting in shape a little bit before you go. Otherwise, you're going to be sorely disappointed when you go out there and get a mile up the trail and they all lay down.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, my buddy, I mean, he's out running his, and when I say running, he's obviously not, you know, running them hard, but he's taking them on treks, on jogs, he's doing some weighted work with them, and you know, they seem to enjoy that too. And I think that's just another bonding thing. It's another opportunity for them to get in line, literally, and, you know, metaphorically, just to be used to that and covering ground, and obviously to be in good physical shape as well, for sure.
Getting them out, you know, it's good exercise for us to get in shape, and then also it gives us a good excuse to get the goats out and get them in shape as well.
So if we keep following this timeline, we have some goats now. We've done some imprinting, some training, some conditioning. We're starting to get to the good stuff. We're starting to get into the backcountry. But before we do, and it's something you mentioned briefly, but transporting them. So obviously, you mentioned it's a huge factor. You don't need a big trailer, things like that. I mean, we were coming from, you know, the Midwest and went out to Colorado, and we break our drive up into 2 days. So we drive essentially from, you know, Missouri, and then we drive past Denver a bit, and then for a bunch of reasons, primarily so that we don't get to the trailhead completely tired and exhausted, and also so that we begin to acclimate. We've always stayed the night, one night in a motel, get one last good night's rest at elevation, and then finish our drive from there. So that whole, you know, day and a half and that overnight, I mean, we had the goats in the back of the truck pretty much the whole time. You obviously let them out a bit when we got to the hotel, let them stretch the legs, get them fresh water, of course, throughout the trip. But certainly they didn't seem to mind being in the back of a truck for, gosh, a better part of, you know, 18, 20 hours. But any other thoughts on transporting them? Any considerations there?
So I've just got a topper, you know, on my truck, and I throw some hay down in the bottom of it just to give them a little padding. But other than that, I mean, yeah, they're like, I have a long bed, full-size truck, and I fit four goats in there, no problem. And their saddles and all that stuff. So there's plenty of room. But you know, if you're going to be transporting them and the weather's going to be kind of crappy, you need something to keep them out of the weather.
For sure.
They can catch a cold. And so you don't want to be, driving 60 miles an hour down the road through a rainstorm with them in the back with no shelter.
Yeah. I didn't mention that, but we had a topper and they were under cover and a nice bed of hay and feed and water back there. But yeah, certainly don't want them out in the elements, especially while you're moving like that. Do you have any, we can kind of get into, gear that's required for the goats, quote unquote gear. We had the pack saddles, of course. We had some leads for them. Really never used them just because, like you said, they just want to be with you so much. So we pretty much never really had them on a lead. We did keep ours on a high line at night, and that was, mainly to keep them out of stuff. But they had a good length of high line they could, move across. And we also packed in some specific, they're like almost little poncho parkas to help keep them warm as well. But I mean, that's, as you kind of mentioned, it's a huge advantage over horses in terms of really, I mean, they're pretty low maintenance, but kind of talk us through, caring for the pack goats while you're, say in the backcountry for a week in terms of, not only gear, anything that's required, but food and water and how does that go really keeping the goats, sustained in the backcountry?
So as far as gear goes, I mean, basically I've got my pack saddles for them, my panniers. I might carry like one lead. But like you said, it's not something you use very often. The only time I think I've ever used it is when you come across horses, coming down the trail and you need to get the goats off the trail. If you're on a, if you're like hiking down a steep canyon or something like that, where there's only one way to pass, you're going to have to, get off the trail and let the bigger stock pass. And leads can come in handy, for that type of stuff. But other than that, I've never used it. Other than that, one thing that, where I've hunted with them so far, I haven't really had to worry about any kind of shelter. But if you're going to be in, if you're expecting a lot of rain or you're in, windswept, open, real cold country, you might think about packing some sort of tarp or something for them, just to kind of break the wind or get string something up so they can get out of the rain. But most of the time, like if you're in timber, they'll get up underneath a dug fir or something like that and be just fine. Other than that, that's all I can really think of as far as what you're going to have in the backcountry with you.
Yeah, it's pretty minimal for sure. So what about food and water? What about keeping these guys fed and watered?
So I've never had them out in like a super arid area where water would have been a concern. And as far as feed goes, like I said before, they'll pretty much eat anything. They eat pine needles and knapweed. And I mean, they're so much easier to find a place to camp than with horses. Cause horses, I mean, you need pretty good grass, and horses eat a lot. So if you're going to be there for a week, you need a lot of grass. With goats, I mean, even if you're camping in like a closed canopy, cedar forest where there's very little understory, they can still scrounge around and find enough to eat most of the time. I've never been in a place where I thought they were, where I needed to, bring something in for them. There's always been enough for them. They don't eat a whole lot.
Yeah, they don't eat a ton, and like you said, they'll eat anything. They eat. It's funny, even though they don't eat a lot, they will eat anything and almost at any time. I mean, it's just like it's funny. Like we would be out on the move, and they would just randomly have to stop and eat the most random thing. I mean, stuff that I can't even describe. I don't even, know what some of these plants and bark and, picking at sticks that look like there's nothing there. But yeah, they essentially eat anything, and they're really just kind of pretty casual, casual grazers, if you will, grazers of anything.
Yeah, you mentioned like granola bars and stuff like that. You gotta be careful what you leave. Like I do, I just let my goats go wherever they want. So if you do it that way, you got to be careful about keeping your camp kind of clean. Cause I mean, for instance, I had my elk calls in a little, like a little sandwich bag, and I left them sitting on the table in front of the tent. And one of those SOBs, chewed up my elk calls like beyond recognition. When I pulled this, I saw the goat chewing on something, and I pulled it out of its mouth, and it was just this like, slobbery, chewed up plastic bag with some colored things inside it. I didn't even know what it was. And I didn't realize until later that it was all my freaking reeds.
Yeah, when you couldn't find your elk calls.
Be careful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I threw it in the trash, and I couldn't find my elk calls, and I was like, God. And I went back and looked through the trash, and sure as hell, it was all my reeds there. The damn goat had chewed up.
That sounds about right. So let's get into the big question. What about actually hunting with the goats? Do they interfere? Do you leave them in camp? Do you bring them with you? Talk about the dynamics of actually pursuing game, trying to close the distance, calling game, all the actual hunting and having these pet goats.
So we did it both ways last year. And this past September was the first year that I had them in elk camp, and it's the only time I've actually hunted with them. And so we had a couple of, I do a lot of still hunting, do some calling as well. But I had several occasions last year where we had elk very close to us with the goats right there. I mean, and I think it acted as almost a distraction. And I think it'll allow me to get away with more than I normally would be able to get away with as far as movement and things like that. Because what I noticed is we had one group of elk that was coming to us, and that you can see them coming through the timber. And you can tell when they see the goats because they all stop and they look. But as soon as they see that it's a four-legged animal, they just continue on with whatever they were doing. We had that happen twice this last year, and one time the goats were with us, and they were in kind of some steep country, the goats were in this talus slope, and so they were running around headbutting each other and just creating a huge ruckus, rolling rocks down the hill, and the elk were coming down a trail. And they got to within 70 yards or so, stopped for a minute or two, till they figured out what was going on. And then here they come. I mean, they didn't care one bit. Now, I did call in a couple of bulls last year, but it just so happened that those days I didn't have the goats with me. And so I don't know how, if you're calling and moving in on a bull, I don't know how that would work out. I just haven't had that experience with them yet. I don't think they would be a problem, but I can say for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I agree 100%. We had multiple instances of just realizing throughout a week of having, I mean, we always had them with us the whole week. And in multiple situations, it became evident that it was more of a positive thing than a negative thing to have them. Like, as you said, I mean, I think if anything, it might give the elk pause, but in the end, it's going to make them more comfortable. I think it might buy you time. It might buy you an opportunity. It might take the focus away from potential you, put it on them, and let you get away with a little bit more. It's pretty amazing. And then the other thing I noticed was that they were actually pretty adept at spotting animals. And there was a few situations where they would spot activity before I did. And at first I didn't even realize it. But for example, we had I think the one that pops into my head was we were kind of cruising through the timber and hit pretty fresh bedding area. And so we kind of set up and did a little bit of calling to see if anything was still around. And, it was so funny. Anytime we'd stop and do like a calling setup, the goats would just pretty much take a seat and chill. It was almost like they knew. It's like, all right, we're just going to hang here for a few minutes. And, the goats sitting there chewing. And all of a sudden, because they're pretty much always chewing in those situations. And I noticed that this goat right next to me had stopped, and I look at it, and it's kind of, at first I thought it was looking at me, but it was kind of looking over my shoulder, and I turn around, and sure enough, game activity. And so it was almost funny in situations after that, when we would do like a calling setup or something like that, as much as I would be looking for game, I would also be paying attention to the goats to see what their mannerisms were and to see if they had spotted anything before I did. So it was pretty interesting for sure.
Yeah, that's a great point. I didn't even think to bring up, but it's the same way with horses. I mean, you can watch a horse's ears, and they're great at picking up game. Goats are the same way. One thing I wanted to mention is just another example of how I think they're going to be an asset. One of the first times I ever had them out, my wife had an elk tag, and we were out this was a rifle hunt. And so we were out just kind of still hunting and jumped a whitetail buck from pretty close, probably 10 yards. But it was one of those situations where it heard us, but didn't see us, didn't smell us. And so when it jumped up, we just stopped and stood still, and the goats were kind of milling around there with us. And when that deer saw the goats, it jumped up out of its bed, but it didn't go anywhere. It stopped, and this deer is like 12 yards from us, and it just started feeding again. I mean, and that's a situation where if we would have been just us, that never would have happened. That deer would have jumped up out of its bed, not saw something that put it at ease, and then took off, but with those goats there, just put it right at ease.
Yeah. In fact, when I shot my bull this year, it was a bull that, we were kind of still hunting. I spotted it, probably 80 yards or something. And I dropped to get a little bit closer. And as I was dropping closer, my buddy was dropping back, and was going to do some cow calling. And of course the goats wanted to be between us. At this point, me and my buddy are, 40, 50, 60 yards separating us. I didn't see him. We were in pretty thick stuff. But anyway, as my buddy dropped in position and was calling, and over a series of few minutes, this bull was working in and then fully committed and was just making a V line right to my buddy. He was headed right towards the goats that were between us. And, I don't even know if my bull saw the goats. I mean, but they were really close. I was 12 yards from the bull and they were not far behind me, but he was actually more directly in line towards the goats than he was me. I was perpendicular, thankfully, but yeah, I don't know. It's one of those things where I wish I would have paid attention, but I obviously had other things on my mind and was focusing elsewhere. But yeah, I mean, if anything, I would not be surprised at all if the bull was aware of those goats. In fact, I'd be kind of surprised if he wasn't, just based on the way it went down. But it didn't keep him from coming at all. So it's pretty interesting in the sense that they could almost, in a way, be an asset.
Yeah, I agree totally.
So what? Let's talk about you know, say you get a bull down, say you get to use these goats for what they're for, which is, you know, packing. And this could be packing out at the end of a successful hunt, or we can back up and talk about packing in, you know, gear and things like that for the hunt. But what kind of loads can a goat carry? Any specific considerations while you have the goats loaded? Kind of talk us through some of those things.
So the pack saddles that I have, I got from, Northwest Pack Goat Supply, I think. They're in Weipe, Idaho. But they've got a brechin strap, I think is what they call it, and then a chest, like a breast collar type of thing, breast strap. You know, because in Idaho, I spend a lot of time in some fairly steep country, and so you need that strap on their chest to keep the saddle from sliding back, and you need that one around their rear to keep it from sliding up over their shoulders when they're going downhill. But if you're going to be in a lot of up and down stuff like that, you got to pay attention to how the packs are riding. You know, if you're going downhill for a long way, you probably should think about tightening up that breech strap. And if you're going uphill, likewise, maybe loosen that one and tighten that breast strap up a little bit. Otherwise, that you know, if you have a load on them, it can kind of slide back and get towards the back of their chest and the up around their belly, and that kind of cuts off their wind a little bit. My goats are still fairly young, and so I haven't had them loaded heavy yet. I think the heaviest load I've had on them was about 30 pounds. But they say when they're full grown, you know, they can pack 25% of their body weight. And I would suspect that's on fairly mellow country. You know, if you're talking a 200-pound goat, 50 pounds, that's a pretty doggone good load. Like I said, I haven't had nearly that much on them. So as far as what you could do to max them out, I haven't pushed that yet.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we loaded, I think they were mostly about 30 at the upper end. And then one of the goats was a bit smaller, and we kept him, I think, more into the mid-20s. And then another thing, and again, this isn't based off of me, but my buddy with all the experience, he mentioned that it's really important as well to try and keep the loads even in terms of, you know, filling up each side of the pannier. And so we literally packed in a little luggage scale with us to try and, you know, kind of to the pound, make sure that we weren't putting an uneven load on the goats. But, you know, when we packed out my bull, we kind of had to climb out of a hole up to the main ridge. And then it was, I mean, we didn't GPS it, but it was probably, I don't know, 4-something, 5 miles back to the truck, and had to drop, I forget what it was, 2,200 feet, something like that. So, you know, it was a good hike for sure. And you could definitely tell that packing 30 pounds was, they had a different pep in their step, if you will, than when they were running around without it. But they did good. I mean, we had to, you know, stop and give them some breaks, and it ended up being a pretty stinking warm day. But man, certainly having three goats carry 90 pounds for you when you're coming out with a bull and camp and all that, 90 pounds is 90 pounds. And shooting, I mean, that's a heavy round trip. And when you're 4 or 5 miles in, that's a lot of time and a lot of miles saved on the legs for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. How have they been able to keep up with you as far as just like hiking down the trail? If they've got a little bit of a load on them, are they fairly slow, or do they keep up with you pretty well?
They kept up well, you know, especially like on the pack in. We had some weight on them for sure. We let them carry some of our gear. But then they kept up really well. Coming out, you know, like I said, you could definitely tell that they were feeling it a bit more. But at the same time, it was kind of one of those things where it was like, oh, good, the goats need a break. I could have used a break, you know. Uh-huh. And it wasn't, you know, long, extended type deal. It was, you know, more so just catching your breath, giving them a second, letting them, again, browse on something, making sure we stop at water when we hit water, things like that. Yeah, it's one of those things where I wouldn't, to be going much faster than we could have without them would have been just, you know, pushing it for the sake of pushing it. I didn't feel like they slowed us, much hardly at all, really. Yeah. And then, you know, in terms of like day to day, as I mentioned, we kept them with us hunting, you know, for the whole week. We didn't kill my bull till the night of the sixth night. So we had a good solid week of running around, you know, the mountains with them. And, you know, I would say the only thing that ever slowed us down with them is when they wanted to stop and eat something and we were going to plan on keep cruising. But even that, you can, you know, you can get them moving for sure. And then, you know, once, you know, we packed in and out on somewhat of a trail, at least for portions of it. But, you know, we spent obviously the week off trail. And, man, there was nothing that we got into that they weren't eager to get into. The only hesitation they ever had was water crossings. They just flat out didn't like water crossings. But in terms of, you know, anything steep, anything loose, anything rocky, I mean, they were right there with us and seemed to be enjoying it.
Yeah. The water crossing, I've experienced that too. What I found though is the more you have them doing that type of stuff, the more they'll get used to it. But, you know, some of these trails, at least in some of the areas that I go to, will have like, just log bridges, you know, for hikers, and they're not, but I mean, they're what, maybe 12 inches wide, if that. And those goats will walk, I mean, with a loaded pack, they'll walk right across that thing, no hesitation at all.
Yeah. Yeah, it was funny. It was almost, we didn't run into those log bridges, but you could see the goat sitting there analyzing, like, okay, if I could step on this rock and that rock, kind of like we do, if we don't want to get wet. You know, it was like they just didn't want to touch the water, yeah. Which is pretty interesting. But yeah, there's a few places where, you know, we had to get them through it. We didn't have a choice.
That is one place that a lead will come in handy. You can drag them. You can drag them across those creeks if you have to.
Absolutely. Well, is there anything else that that comes to mind that you think would be helpful for listeners who are just either interested in learning about this or maybe considering it for the future in the process of maybe looking at pack animals for hunting? Anything we didn't cover you think would be helpful?
Well, just as far as getting goats and keeping them, you know, you don't need a lot of room to do it. You know, a couple of acres would be plenty. I don't know. I haven't calculated how much hay a full-grown goat will go through in a winter. But like here in Idaho, in North Idaho, our grass stops growing about August. And so I'll start feeding them hay in August or September, and I feed them hay all the way until mid-April or so. So a pretty good chunk of the year. And I've got 7 goats all together. They still don't even come anywhere near eating as much as 2 horses would. So they're pretty low cost. As far as getting goats, I would find someone who has pack goats or somebody who has alpines. I would not go to like a sale yard or something like that. There's no telling what you're going to end up with if you get animals from a sale yard. And, you know, on top of that, sale yards are pretty much, you get an animal from a sale yard and you can guarantee he's going to have some sort of sickness, because just that place with, you know, there's so many animals that come in contact with one another in those areas, they're likely to pick something up. So that'd be a point of caution, I guess.
Yeah, that's a great point for sure. What resources have you found helpful? I mean, you kind of mentioned that you dove into this kind of not knowing anything and it was trial by fire, but along the way, as you've read or looked at other resources, what resources have been helpful for you to learn?
Oh, there's a website. Let's see if I can find it. Pat Goat Association or something like that. North American Pat Goat Association. They've got links to all sorts of different stuff. Like I said, where I got my all my pack saddles and pads and all that stuff is the Northwest Pack Goats. They've got saddles there that are just the saddle components that are unfinished, and they're a lot cheaper. And that's what I got. You can buy all your panniers and everything from them, or you know, if you're handy with a sewing machine, you can make them. There's not a lot to them, you know. The other thing that you'd need to keep in mind is you got to trim their hooves, and that's not hard at all. I mean, I can trim a goat's hooves in just a couple of minutes with some little things that look like plant shears, but they're they sell them at you know, goat supply stores, or I'm sure the Pat Goat places have them.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that Pat Goat Association. I open up the mail one day, large manila envelope, and I pull out, and it's the yearly calendar of the Pat Goat Association, the 2017 calendar. And my buddy had, I guess, sent them some photos from our trip. And anyway, one of our pictures are in the 2017 calendar. So that's pretty much my claim to fame now, is that I'm in the 2017 Pack Goat calendar.
That's awesome. I don't have to get you out of that.
It's only like $15 a pop, but for you, I'll work out a deal, Clay.
Yeah. I appreciate that.
Well, man, we appreciate the time. This has been good. Yeah, really appreciate it, and excited to see where the goats take you on future adventures.
Well, we've got pretty what's hopefully going to turn out to be a pretty epic bear hunt this spring. I don't know if the pack goats are going to make it on that hunt or not, but we'll see. We'll definitely have them in elk camp this fall.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
Same here. We're definitely planning on keeping up with them. So your website, twistedstave.com, right? Is that the best place for our listeners to stay up to date with you and see what happens with the bear hunt and next elk season and all that good stuff?
Yeah, they can get on my website. Anybody that wants to be kept up to date can go on there and sign up for my mailing list. I don't send out a bunch of marketing stuff, so you're not going to get bombarded with spam, but I do send out blog posts, things like that, new videos.
Yeah, absolutely. And for you listeners who didn't catch our first episode with Clay, we discussed more of his films, some not only your hunting films, but some great video resources that you've put together more on the educational end of things. So you guys who are new to what Clay has to offer, definitely check out his website, check out our previous episode with him, which was podcast 27. And Clay, thanks for joining us again. We might have to have you on for a third time next year.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll probably be better schooled on the intricacies of pack goats by that time.
we'll have more lessons learned and more stories about the always entertaining pack goats.
Yep, that's for sure.
Well, that's a wrap on this one. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening, and thanks to Clay as well for joining us. To access the show notes or subscribe and make sure you get all the future episodes, go ahead and visit exomountaingear.com/podcast. As well, as we mentioned, we love your feedback. We would love to hear about any questions, topics, suggestions, or comments you have. Just shoot us an email to podcast@exomountaingear.com. And as well, if you're enjoying the show, consider leaving us that review in iTunes or wherever else you might be listening to this. We're looking forward to the next episode. Hope you guys are as well, and we'll talk to you soon.